This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
This podcast was born December 4th, weighing in on Lynn and Liverpool. It's the first season of the bowl season, the only one in which we won't ponder the timing of a defensive coordinator hire. And that's how we knew it's going to be a special show. I'm your host, Mike Garcia, journalist, with my co-host here in the Radio Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
That was probably terrible. You did not get the reference when I was putting together the rundown, and I'm offended. As someone who, like, I know, like, all of three rap songs, and I expect you to at least know more than me, and you didn't even get it. Like,
I didn't get it. I now know that's a Jay-Z song.
Killing
I can't
me.
Say I've listened to a ton of Jay-Z in my life, though.
I mean, me neither, but
I mean, like
I know
radio
that
play
one.
Stuff. Well, I don't know.
99 Problems in December 4th.
I mean,
4th.
I know
That's
99
it.
Problems. That's the one I know.
Yeah.
I know 99 Problems and the stuff he did with Linkin Park. That's about it.
All right. Fair enough. Anyways, welcome back to episode 524. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. USC in the Holiday Bowl, everybody's favorite bowl game, I think. The Trojans got a new defensive coordinator, Danton Lynn. We're going to talk about that a little bit more than we did the other day. And then there's early transfer portal stuff. And then at some point, we're probably going to talk about the playoff and what happened in the college football playoff and weigh in on that sort of stuff. But Alicia, there's a lot to get to, and I don't know how we're gonna keep this sort of under 2 hours or something like that, but you know, we're gonna have to, because we took the under over on Sleeper Daily Fantasy. Because have you heard of Sleeper Daily Fantasy? Sleeper hosts daily fantasy prop games that you can compete for a chance to win cash prizes. The game is simple. For each contest, you're given a pool of props for upcoming games across different sports. You pick whether the prop will be over or under given the total. You choose then up to 8 different props for a chance at a bigger win. If you want to get in on the action, we've got you covered. Sign up with our promo code FANSIDED2 today. And receive a deposit match of up to $100 using the code FANSIDED2 when signing up. Not only gives you the great reward, but helps directly support this very podcast. So make sure to use the promo code FANSIDED2 when you sign up. If you're watching this on YouTube, there's a little QR code in the corner of your screen. Get out your iPhone. Assuming that you have an iPhone, because you don't want to be a green texter, you know. And then, you know, snap a picture of the little QR code and head over. The offer is only available to new customers who are 18 plus and physically present in valid states, including California. Please remember to always game responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. As always, Alicia, we got a bunch to get to. So let's start with the news.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's talk about Danton Lynn a little bit here. Danton Lynn, USC's new defensive coordinator, hired after one season at UCLA. Lincoln Riley met the press today, Monday. Danton Lynn will have a Zoom call with the media tomorrow, Tuesday. And the Lincoln Riley quotes, I think, were sort of interesting. He was talking about getting bigger on the defensive line. Quote, philosophical changes, there'll be a lot. This will be a very distant system than what we were running previously. This is a system, as I started diving into it, that is not necessarily with Coach Lynn, but with all these candidates, there were a few non-negotiables, at least on my part, a few things that were really, really important, and then they matched up with Coach Lynn, especially with the defensive front, especially in terms of the evaluation and development of size on the defensive front and how we want to play there. There were a few things that were really important to me, and Coach Lynn's system certainly fits that, and not just fits that, excels with that. Alicia, we talk about coach speak a lot whatnot. This, I think, is the opposite of coach speak. It might be fan service, because this is the thing that people have been wanting to hear forever. Is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. This is what people wanted to hear, that USC was going to beef up on the defensive line and take the defensive front, I think, more seriously and make it more of a foundational piece of the defense, because that is how you win championships in the long run. You don't see teams that don't have dominant defensive lines go very far in the national conversation, at least. So Danton Lynn, that was what he did extremely well at UCLA. He got the most out of UCLA's defensive front. USC fans saw it firsthand. Mm-hmm. How did they disrupt USC's offense? How did they disrupt a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback? They overran the offensive line. They won the battle in the trenches. And I think it's just noteworthy that he's talking about size on the defensive front, because that was one of the things that I think a lot of people were very skeptical of Alex Grinch. The idea that he preferred smaller defensive linemen. And it was something that I harped on all season because I felt like it shouldn't. I understood it in 2022, because they inherited players that they inherited personnel that they just sort of had to work within the bounds of that. In 2023, it felt like, okay, you dealt with that before because you had to. Now show me that you are willing to play bigger guys, win those battles, stop the run, all of those kinds of things on the defensive front. And they continually put out 270-pound defensive tackles. And it infuriated me. So I think that's not something that we will see from the new defense, at least not by choice, because the formula there for the defensive front will be slightly different. It's not going to be a complete personnel overhaul in terms of the kind of personnel that they are bringing in, but the personnel decisions around weight and strength and all of those kinds of things, all of the Benny Wiley complaints about how USC's defense or guys in the trenches were too small, all of those things theoretically are answered by this hire, because I don't think Benny Wiley, who, by the way, the strength and conditioning coach, is simply following the directions of the coordinator who's asking them to get the players to certain weights.
Right.
I think he will be expected to have USC's defensive linemen be quite a bit bigger in the coming year. So we'll see that. I'm pretty excited to see that, actually.
Yeah, we cheers to West Texas Mike. Cheers. We got a super chat that says, since when did Lingorelli care about the size of the defensive front? Did he not care for the past 5 years? He hired Alex Grinch. Yeah, I think that's a valid thing to be skeptical of, right? At the same time, if he gets to this point, like, the key is for him to have this realization, but I think it's twofold. He's got to be able to get to this realization and follow through on it. This can't just be lip service. It can't just be fan service, telling the fans what they want to hear. We got to go see them actually sort of do these things and prioritize them with actions. But the other flip side is, we talked about it before, he has never lost the way that he lost this year, Lincoln Riley. And so this was like the eye-opening thing for him to make changes. And we talked about, like, if he's going to get better as a head coach, he's got to make big changes. Maybe this is just, maybe it took the season just getting derailed because he's never lost like this before for him to, you know, get to this point. It shouldn't have had to get to this point, but sometimes it does, because when you keep going to the playoff and when you keep having 11 win regular seasons, it's sort of difficult to rationalize any change and rock the boat, right? Like, so.
Well, and as a coach, you're allowed to be wrong. Like, you're allowed to hold it. I mean, as not just a coach, as a person, as a whatever, like, we all have incorrect opinions that we think are correct in the moment, and then we look back on it and realize, like, no, actually, I got that wrong. This next time, I got to make a different decision and a different evaluation, because the thing that we tried before didn't work. Like, that's I'm perfectly fine with saying, with coming out and saying, you know, with my next defensive coordinator hire, I did not want to do the same thing, which is bring in somebody who was going to key in on sort of the speed defense, smaller defensive front. I wanted to give somebody a chance who will go in there and develop size on the defensive front. That's a good sign to be cognizant of that. And that, like, so I'm not going to beat Lincoln Riley over the head with that. This, like, ultimately he is doing what everybody was asking him to do, because he experienced the pain of failure and now has to go out there and address it. I think that we should view that as a good thing. And let, you know, let Lincoln roll the dice here and figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, West Texas Mike says, I want to know when it clicked. I don't know. I don't know when.
Probably at some point this season when he realized that it wasn't working.
Yeah,
I mean, the other thing that he said, there was a bunch of things that he said, but one of the other things that he said that I thought was very noteworthy, that I didn't throw into the rundown here, is that he talked about how he wanted somebody who was willing to be a little bit more flexible about how they were going to deploy personnel and how they were going to create their fronts. And it's not just about being multiple. I think what I got from those comments was about my main criticism of Alex Grinch, which was it seemed like Alex Grinch was blaming the personnel for everything going wrong instead of fixing his
philosophy
and scheme around what he had available to him and working within the confines of that. And I think that's something that Lincoln Riley has identified with Lynn is something that he wants to lean on, is this idea that you take the players that are in front of you and you fit them into the puzzle in the best way possible, instead of trying to insist that if you don't have any square pegs, that that's just the end of the thing, instead of saying, well, why don't we try a round hole then, to fit what we go with.
Yeah. It all of this bodes well for the Trojans if they're able to follow through on it. Like we said before in the reaction to USC hiring Danton Lynn, is exactly the person to do the turnaround, because we've literally seen him do this at UCLA. I think that, you know, ideally you'd like to have a defensive coordinator with a longer track record of being a defensive coordinator, multiple stops of success as a defensive coordinator, all those things that, you know, we have on our little, you know, criteria chart, that maybe he doesn't check off. But having said that, we literally saw him, you know, go into UCLA and just turn things around. And they had a lot of transfer portal guys, even though there were a lot of those dudes that he inherited that were already transferred in. Well, there's a lot of guys at USC that have already transferred in, like Anthony Lucas and Bear Alexander, who are still going to be here next year, that he's got to get more out of. Did want to issue a little mea culpa here. I can't math. It's a problem. We got multiple comments about how the point system didn't make sense, because like 2 weeks ago we said that it was a 44 point scale, and then for some reason I changed it to a 33 point scale last week because I got my math mixed up. I was adding the first column as if it was the second column, as if there were 3 points instead of 5 points each. So long story short, Danton Lynn, 33 out of 44. On our criteria, checklist.
Can I clarify, just if we're going to be talking about comments that we got on YouTube, can I clarify something?
Yeah, you people are not happy with you.
I am not pessimistic, Alicia, about Danton Lynn. I understand why people are misinterpreting what I'm saying with that, because he is a candidate with very clear pros and very clear cons. Like, I think that if we ignore the things that are that are concerns or worries about his ability to come in and have success at USC, we're just being blind. I'm not ignoring those elements. Those are concerning elements to me. But I'm not being pessimistic. I'm not sitting here saying this hire is not going to work out, which is what pessimism would truly be. Mm-hmm. I think this hire is going to work. I think this is going to turn out to be a really solid hire for USC. Where my skepticism comes from is USC needed to hire a coordinator who could be elite, top, you know, perennial top 10. And Lynn, I don't think it's a home run. That doesn't mean that I'm being pessimistic.
Lynn can be there, but he's not there yet. And yeah. I think that, you know, there are some people who would look at, you know, Jim Leonard or Manny Diaz, or
who, by the way, if Jim Leonard got hired, I would have had to sit here and we had conversations before about how, well, there are some things about Jim Leonard that are very uncertain. He's only ever done it at Wisconsin, where he was set up to win at Wisconsin with defenses that had won before. Like, we would have had those same conversations. It's not about being pessimistic about this hire. It's about giving you a full picture of the positives and negatives of any hire that comes in. When it comes down to it, though, as you've pointed out, USC hired the guy who literally did the thing that USC needed to do with UCLA last year.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The flip side of that too is you talked about you know, the positive and negatives, and I think more than anything, I think it's not that I want to shy away from the word negatives, but like, it's really risk, right? It's risk, and it's understanding what the risks are.
Yeah.
The risks for Danton Lynn are the little X's here on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube. Like, we don't have him checked off as an ace recruiter because we haven't seen him be an ace recruiter. He might very well be, but we don't know that he is because he hasn't been around long enough to truly be one yet. And so that's a risk. He could be the greatest recruiter of all time. We don't know yet. So we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see if he can have success at multiple stops, et cetera. If he can have success in the Big Ten as a coach, not as a player. So we're going to have to see that way. We did get a question on Discord that I want to get to from Sean in Mid-City. No matter how unrealistic, is there any actual perfect person who could have got a perfect score on your DC rubric? Maybe Pete Carroll? Realistically, I think the answer is no. I don't think there's a single person that could get, like, Lendak, maybe? Like, there's, like, nobody who could get the perfect score because... who could you think of? Like, I was thinking about it, like Bob Stoops. If Bob Stoops was your defensive coordinator, he would check off all of these boxes, except we'd have to fudge the NFL thing because we could say, well, he has XFL experience, but like, he doesn't have USC connections.
Nick Saban wouldn't ace this.
Nick
rubric.
Saban doesn't have, yeah,
he doesn't have any USC connections. He doesn't have or USC SoCal connections.
Pete Carroll would be interesting because Pete Carroll would check all of these boxes, but like you'd be lying to yourself about Big Ten experience because Pete Carroll has not coached in the Big Ten since 1979. So like, yes, he would count.
But the question is not that there is no perfect candidate.
Right. Yeah.
There is no perfect candidate. I think it's important to
look at. Look at Lincoln Riley, right? Like Lincoln Riley is a head coach we said was just about the ideal hire that you could have gotten a couple of years ago. But there certainly were flaws because Nick Saban wasn't a possible hire. You know what I mean? Like that just,
yeah. You know,
the hire that people want doesn't exist.
And when Georgia hired Kirby Smart, there were a million reasons why that was a great hire.
Yeah.
And also a handful of risks around that.
Well,
hire.
Because did Jeremy Pruitt work at Tennessee?
You know, this is what happens with hires. This is why.
Is Billy Napier working at Florida?
You evaluate the hires and then you see what they go out and do. And I think that's what I'm super excited to see what Danton Lynn goes out and does, because I think there's positive vibes around this defensive coordinator move.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it rolls. But there's still a lot of dominoes that need to fall in order to say that it's going to work out.
Yeah.
We're going to see them fall or not.
Yeah. Want to give another shout out to Fadion MC for a super chat, by the way. Thank you. Appreciate it. You guys are the best. Let's get to the other news. Talking about the bowl game. The bowl season is underway, about to be underway. USC is playing in the Holiday Bowl. I joke that it's everyone's favorite Holiday Bowl. Everybody's favorite bowl, the Holiday Bowl. I have weird opinions about the Holiday Bowl. As a kid, I loved the Holiday Bowl. It always felt like a big destination game. It always felt like it was a game that should have had more cachet than it did. I think the Holiday Bowl should have been turned into a New Year's Six Bowl instead of the Peach Bowl, personally.
Yeah, but why did that not happen? Because they played at Qualcomm.
Because they played at Qualcomm.
If San Diego had built a new football stadium, yes, that would have been a huge bowl destination.
And the irony is they did build a new football stadium, and yet the Holiday Bowl is not there. The Holiday Bowl is at Petco Park. December 27th, the Trojans will play Louisville. The Louisville Cardinals. First time ever USC will play Louisville. Someone who won't play will be Caleb Williams. Lincoln Riley confirmed this. I think we all assumed that Caleb Williams was not going to play, so it's going to be Miller Moss that's going to be out there playing for the Trojans in that. But Louisville, 10-3. They were 10-2 in the regular season. They lost to Florida State in the ACC's championship game, 16-6. They could have done a world of saving if they would have just put Florida State out of their misery, save some controversy for the playoff. But alas, they did not. But Louisville is led by quarterback Jack Plummer. Might sound familiar because he threw for 406 yards and 3 touchdowns a year ago. For Cal against the Trojans, it was the 10th most prolific passing game against a USC defense in school history. Alicia, there's a little trivia question. There's two quarterbacks all time who have thrown for 500 yards against the Trojans. Can you name them?
Well, I've seen one of the names on the rundown, so.
Oh, shoot.
It's feeling like cheating.
Okay, so number one on that list is Joe Theismann. 33 of 58 for 526 yards and two TDs in 1970, which blows my mind. Like, Notre Dame was like, it was a big deal when Ty Willingham went to Notre Dame in like 2002, right? Because he was taking over for like no more triple option for Notre Dame, and he's going to bring the West Coast offense, and they're going to learn how to throw the ball and all this stuff. And it's like, but yet Theismann threw for 526 yards. What? Weird. The other one, Mike Bercovici, 510 yards.
The blast from the past.
In the Jail Mary game, yeah. Anyways, the Trojans and Cardinals will be playing at Petco Park, the home of the San Diego Padres. Another little bit of way too much nerdy research I did before this episode. I was curious about USC playing at MLB stadiums, current MLB stadiums. Current as in like active, not necessarily active right now, but active while the game was there. I did a lot of research. The Trojans have played 12 games away from the Coliseum in a current MLB stadium, starting in 1951 when the Trojans beat Army 28-6 at Yankee Stadium. Most recently, 2011, they beat Cal 30-9 at Pac-Bell Park up in San Francisco. But 9-2-1 in those 12 games. This took a hell of a lot of research, including like SC beat Washington State at the Kingdome in 1976 randomly, because Washington State used to host a game every year in Seattle for their Seattle alumni base. But also, this did not include in 1950 the Trojans lost to Navy at Memorial Stadium in Baltimore, 4 years before the Orioles existed. So that one did not count. So 9-2-1, the Trojans are in games in which the Trojans play at a active MLB stadium. The two losses, Fresno State and North Carolina back-to-back at Anaheim Stadium in 1992 and 1993. The tie, also in 1992, against San Diego State at Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego.
Not a good couple of years for USC.
No, it was a stretch that was stadiums. There's like a year and a half stretch where SC played four games in that stretch and went 1-1-2. Really bad. Or 1-2-1, whatever. Now, I also was thinking, well, you have to include the Coliseum, right? Because SC played at the Coliseum from 1958 to 1961, co-hosting with the Dodgers, who were playing there when the Dodger Stadium was being constructed. Trojans' record in that time at home, 13-10-1, including road games at the Coliseum, road games, quote-unquote, against UCLA. So 13-10-1. So all time, 36 games at an active MLB stadium, 22-12-2. There you go.
Remember when we were dreaming about USC playing at Wrigley because of the Northwestern matchup that is no longer
a matchup? I know. Smee says, worst pronunciation of Joe Theismann I've ever heard.
I love this.
No, it's not.
It's not.
His name is Joe Theismann.
His name is Joe Theismann.
Changed his name to Theismann so it would rhyme with the Heisman for PR purposes. But his name is Joe Theismann.
Yes. Look it up. Yeah. Look it up. It's one of my favorite little weird trivia nuggets. It's Theismann.
All right. Other news. Let's talk about the roster stuff. Departures. Marshawn Lloyd headed to the NFL draft. Not a shock. Not a surprise at all. I think we would have.
I always say running backs should leave when they have the opportunity to leave.
Yeah. Jude Wolf and Chris Thompson Jr. headed to the transfer portal.
Yeah, neither are great losses for USC. Jude Wolf is one of those guys that it just the what ifs of if he had been able to stay healthy, what might he have been able to do at USC? But So far, all of the transfer portal additions leaving USC are not surprising at all. So
yeah,
we'll see as those continue to come in.
Relique Brown, Darwin Barlow were the ones from last week that we talked about. Guys who combined for 8 touches on offense. So
yeah,
this is what happens. Marshawn Lloyd going to the NFL draft is because he's had success, and the NFL is a thing where if you're a running back, you got to go. And if you're not getting playing time and all those things, makes sense to hit the transfer portal as well, just like Barlow, Brown, Wolf, Thompson. All right, let's talk about the other transfer portal stuff. The Trojans looking to go get dudes. There was a report confirmed by USC media on Monday that Lincoln Riley was in the market for a transfer quarterback, potentially Will Howard. This is per K-State Online. That Riley was going to meet with Will Howard, the Kansas State quarterback. The fourth best quarterback in the transfer portal, according to 24/7. He led Kansas State to the Big 12 title in 2022. 2,600 passing yards and 24 touchdowns and 10 picks this past season. The numbers are fine. But I think that you can make the argument that he's not necessarily in a system that, you know, is overly dynamic for him. So I don't know. This is interesting. When I've seen Will Howard, I've been impressed. I don't know that it would have been the first name off the top of my head, like say Cam Ward or Dylan Gabriel, who are also heading to the portal.
Yeah. The interesting thing here is that there's a lot of smoke around this this meeting between Lincoln Riley and Will Howard. He is well regarded as a quarterback. He has passing talent.
Yeah.
He obviously had the wits about him to win a Big 12 title as an underdog going up against TCU. Mm-hmm. In that game.
Yeah.
And he looks like the profile of quarterback who you could see elevating considerably under a Lincoln Riley system. I mean, he's like one of Kansas State's all-time passing leaders. He's thrown more touchdowns than anybody in Kansas State history. So, like, you have to,
I mean,
judge numbers against the program in which they are operating. It's sort of...
How many great Kansas State quarterbacks can you mention?
That's the thing, is how many great Kansas State quarterbacks can you
mention? Colin Klein was basically...
The best of the best, yeah.
Was like great value Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
Bishop and L. Roberson. Both guys were running the triple option.
So, but that's my thing is, like, if you are the quarterback at Kansas State, you're not much is expected of you.
Yeah.
So you have to go on evaluation. And from where I sit, if Lincoln Riley is evaluating a quarterback enough to decide that he's going to go have an in-person conversation with that quarterback, that means he sees something that he can work with. And I will defer to Lincoln Riley on his quarterback choice when it comes down to it. There are, like you said, there are other names in the portal. There's a ton of names in the portal. And NIL will be a factor here for sure with a lot of these names. But USC is being linked to a guy like Cam Ward, to a guy like Dylan Gabriel, who, by the way, would be the single funniest transfer. USC has already made the single funniest hire they could have made at defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
They could up the just pure comedy level to a ridiculous degree if USC turned around and picked up Dylan Gabriel from the transfer portal, the Oklahoma quarterback. It's almost too funny to believe that being the reality. I fully expect Dylan Gabriel to follow Jeff Lebby to Mississippi State personally, but you never know. Like, when the opportunity to come and play for Lincoln Riley arises, there's a whole other consideration to be made for these players. The other name that I want to throw out there as somebody to watch is Georgia backup Brock Vandegrift. He had committed to Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma at one point, so he's definitely somebody that you have to say might be somebody to look at for the potential. But it's very clear at this point that USC is going to bring in a transfer quarterback, if not multiple. So we'll see
You want to talk about guys that Lincoln Riley recruited? You know, there's Cam Rising.
Who's not in the transfer portal.
I know, but you know. You've been talking about Brock Vandegrift since September.
Yeah. Well, ever since he lost the Georgia quarterback battle to Carson Beck, it's definitely somebody who you have to consider. But suffice it to say, there are a bajillion good quality quarterbacks in the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't know that USC will 1,000,000% be at the front of the line for every single one of them, because there's NIL allocations and all this other stuff that sort of, location, relationships, all of that kind of stuff is going to be involved. Like the Oregon State quarterback, Aiden, is it Chili's or Childs? I never know how to say his name.
I don't think I've ever seen the name Childs pronounced as Chili's.
So let's go. Aiden Childs is the top quarterback in the portal right now, and he's heavily tipped to go to Michigan State to follow Jonathan Smith. Like, he's following his coach. So, Riley Leonard entered his name in the portal, the guy from Duke, and immediately national media, everybody was saying, watch out for Notre Dame here. He's probably going to Notre Dame. So USC won't have necessarily the pick of everybody that's on the table. But I have to feel rather confident that Lincoln Riley will be able to bring in the person or people that he wants.
What is the pitch? Like Kenny in the chat says, play for Lincoln Riley and you can win a Heisman. You need like three slides. Okay, here are my last X amount of quarterbacks who won Heismans, and they were all transfers. So you could be the next.
And it's not like you won't make money in LA with NIL stuff. There will be plenty of NIL. Yeah,
I think Cam Ward absolutely seems like the pick for me. If it, like, nothing else was included, ever since he retired from the Hurricanes, like, he has been, fantastic as the quarterback of Washington State. He's got that resume. Won the Conn Smythe in 2006. So I think. You're just not getting this reference.
You're
either
making an NHL reference that I recognize as an NHL reference, and still not picking up what you're putting down.
The point is, Cam Ward, Dylan Gabriel, Will Howard. I think all those guys would be solid gets for SC, depending on who it is. If it's me, I'm taking Cam Ward. Dante Moore is interesting just because you get so much term with him, 3 years of eligibility. But, at that point, how is Dante Moore much different than, say, Malachi Nelson in terms of, someone that you still need to develop, too? So, if what is your goal here? Is your goal to get a plug-and-play quarterback? Because if that's the case, you go out and get Ward, Gabriel, or Howard, right? If your goal is to find the best quarterback with term, with eligibility, then maybe Dante Moore is the answer, right?
Honestly, in the transfer portal era as it currently exists, I wouldn't prioritize term, to be quite honest. I think the way to go here is get the best quarterback at whatever eligibility they have left. Get the one that's in there, because if you have to then search next year, you'd be doing that probably anyways.
And you do.
The interesting thing here is the calculation around Malachi Nelson, Miller Moss, and a transfer quarterback or two. Miller Moss has a really great opportunity in the Holiday Bowl to sort of prove that he is actually a factor in a quarterback competition. But I thought it was also interesting that the discussion around Malachi Nelson with Lincoln Riley with the media today. He said that there had been some setbacks in terms of Malachi Nelson this year, that heavily hinted to me that there was, the injury that he suffered last year was something that was delaying his progression. And so if that's the case, then taking a quarterback who's going to be a one and done kind of guy maybe allows you to keep Malachi Nelson by a year in terms of his development, if he's on board with the idea that he needs to continue to recover from that injury and fully
mm-hmm.
fully get back before he can be handed the reins, and then have sort of the best of both worlds. But when it comes down to it, every year there will be a million playable quarterbacks in the portal, and every year that Lincoln Riley is at USC, he will have a very strong argument to get the pick of the litter.
Yeah.
So you just roll is the way I see it.
Yeah, it's essentially college basketball and the one and done rule, in the sense of, like, you can go out and just sort of do the Kentucky thing of having a new team every year, but having a new quarterback or having a new skill position player or whatever it is. It's way different than what we're used to with college football, but it's where we're at, right? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about offers that we know that SC has put out. Offensive tackle Spencer Brown from Michigan State. Offensive guard Remington Strickland from Texas A&M. Great name.
Remington Strickland? Yeah.
Like, first of all, a name like Remington Strickland, like, what are we thinking? Prep school? like, you probably have Remington somebody related to, like, a founding father or somebody.
Remington is certainly a choice for it's, a first name. Well, there's
the Remington trophy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. For an offensive lineman, it's nominative determinism is a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. On the defensive line, Nate Clifton from Vandy. Joey Slackman from Penn.
He was
UPenn.
He was the first offer that USC made within the window that it seems like USC would be making offers, knowing that Danton Lynn was the one making the offer. Yeah. The offer came in, like, right before the Lynn hire leaked, before it broke. And he is one of the top transfer defensive linemen from sort of the lower level to come up. So I think he's really, really intriguing for USC, and he's a 300-pounder. It's sort of the profile of guy that USC should be looking at, in my view.
Can you think of the last SC guy? I don't know if it's the last one, but the most notable to come from the FCS level? Can you think of one?
From the FCS level?
There's been a few, but the big notable one is Lofa Tatupu.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
From Maine.
Yeah, that's right. He was from Maine.
The Maine Bears, yeah. Defensive end RJ Oben from Duke is the top edge rusher per 24/7 Sports. We'll see what comes of that. Will Lee from K-State, a defensive back. Upton Stout from Western Kentucky. And Ethan Robinson from Bucknell, another FCS school, to mention. The guy that I haven't seen anything about a USC offer, but to me, the guy that you go out and you figure, you call, like, every single USC car dealership that you can and scrounge up NIL money is Walter Nolan.
Absolutely. From Texas A&M. You throw quarterback money at Walter Nolan if you're USC.
Yeah.
It's silly season. We can officially start calling transfer portal season silly season. There are rumors of giant guys who are potentially going to be thinking about going into the portal that USC should be throwing every single thing they could possibly be at those guys. So it's only going to get more wild. These are just the guys that USC has seemingly offered. These are guys who have tweeted that they've gotten offers from USC. So we know for sure that USC is interested, but there will also be a lot of really weird, weird stuff that's going on in terms of guys who become available or don't become available. So buckle up, strap in. It's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
Start with a voicemail that we got.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Alicia. This is Eric in Salina, Texas. Looks like USC is going to play in the Holiday Bowl, and it looks like the offense will be headed up by Miller Moss. What are some things that you're looking for out of Miller Moss and this offense without Caleb Williams?
Thanks for the call, Eric. Lisa, what do you think? What, no Caleb in the Holiday Bowl. How does this differ from, say, Miller Moss's last? I mean, we saw him in the Stanford game, but play a whole half. But the last time that he really got to use to go up against, I hate this term, but the Clay Helton thing about the live bullets was the Cal game back in 2021, right?
Yeah, I am really looking forward to seeing Miller Moss because I was not impressed with what I saw in the second half against Stanford, but I also recognize that he was playing behind the second string offensive line, and we now know the USC's complete and utter lack of depth and all of that, so I don't think he was necessarily given a fair shake in that game. So I'm looking forward to see him behind the first team offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that that first team offensive line is number one, healthy, number two, more gelled together, and more capable of providing a platform upon which a quarterback can actually succeed.
Yeah.
Because if they play the way that they've played in some games this year, then Miller Moss isn't really going to have too much of a chance to show us that he can be the guy. But I am looking for him to be decisive, to be an effective decision maker, to be capable of navigating a pocket. And if there are breakdowns on the offensive line, I don't need him to be as mobile as Caleb Williams, but to make the decisions and to have the cool head in the pocket that proves that he can withstand if the offensive line isn't giving him a million minutes to throw, and just that the offense moves, that he knows how to operate within a Lincoln Riley system and can have the offense get into a rhythm. I think more than anything, I would say if he proves that he can get the offense into a rhythm and a flow and be effective in that way, a lot of my skepticism will be diminished. And then it's about, you know, going out. Can he make a big play?
Mm-hmm.
Can he show composure on third downs? Like all of the things that you're looking for in a quarterback that can prove that quarterback can elevate your offense.
Yeah.
He did not elevate the offense against Stanford, and I need to see him do that in a game where USC is like an 8-point underdog. So, you know, if he goes out and wins the game for USC, that does mean something.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned SC being an underdog here. I also, this is, once I saw that it was Louisville, like, I think this is a terrible matchup, like completely. Louisville's a very strong defensive team. This is a, like, I'd almost rather see SC in a team that was face maybe someone like Clemson that
I didn't, you know, want to see Clemson. I didn't want to see anybody. Sure, but so, like,
somebody that was maybe gonna, you know, try to run with SC a little bit, and you know, Jack Plummer certainly capable of that thing, especially when you look at the USC defense. I think anything is capable of turning into a shootout that way. But I like what's the play here? I think that Louisville should be way more motivated to play in this game. It is a bowl game. I think that you can make the argument that maybe Louisville could feel all boo-boo face for losing the ACC championship game, and then they don't want to be here either. And it sucks that bowl games have to have that question about whether or not you want to be there. I hate that, but that's the reality of the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, a year ago, SC was in a bowl game in the Cotton Bowl, in which we said that there was no reason for them to be there. We talked all month, like, you know, no Pac-12 team had ever won a bowl game after losing the Pac-12 championship game. SC continued that streak by losing, but you can't say that they didn't have effort that day. The offense absolutely came to play. SC was up by double digits in the third quarter, weren't they? Like, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like it wasn't a lack of effort. Oh, that USC wasn't the problem against Tulane, right?
USC should have won that game.
Yeah,
the fact that they didn't win that game is
astounding. Yeah.
And that's a measure of defense and special teams combining, right?
And you know, even look at the Holiday Bowl in 2019. I know people like to say that Iowa, you know, jiggle bagged SC, but that's not really what happened. Like, no. Keaton Slovis got hurt. Iowa could not stop Keaton Slovis while he was healthy in that game. So I think that what do you want to see from Miller Moss? I think the key is, I think it's going to be so valuable for him to have a full month of first team reps. The other thing is this, we have to understand. Yes, I think that Caleb Williams made up for so many deficiencies in this USC offense when it comes to the offensive line issues, when it comes to maybe the downturn in play of the wide receivers, all those kind of things. I think that he elevated those. He elevated the offense from that perspective. At the same time, this is an offense that should be in a position to help the quarterback. This is an offense in which every quarterback who has run a Lincoln Riley offense has succeeded. The bad one, the one that Oklahoma fans point to, is Spencer Rattler, and he succeeded in this offense nonetheless. His quarterback rating would be a school record at USC. Like that's how efficient he was running this offense. So I think that we have to look at it that way, that yes, Caleb Williams can do things that Miller Moss can't do. At least we haven't seen. But the offense itself should be in a position to help the quarterback more than most. And I think he might be able to have success that way. But again, it's a bowl game. You never know what team is going to show up. This team could...
And we certainly don't know what defense is going to show up either.
Yeah, right. And I think a bowl game no-show would have been way more palatable than a UCLA rivalry game no-show. And SC already no-showed the UCLA game.
Yeah.
So I think that's a bad sign going into the bowl game, right? Like, it would have been one thing if they would have beaten UCLA and then no-showed the bowl game, because teams no-show the bowl games all the time now. But, like, UCLA, I mean, the UCLA game was the no-show, which is
the only hope against a no-show is defensively, those practices you have to assume will be observed by the new defensive coordinator, and players, if they want to be around, know they need to make an impression. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, 150%. All right, let's get to a message that we got from email we got from Tony in Denora, PA. Michael and Alicia, this is Tony from Denora, PA. I'm excited but also reserved about this hire, meaning Danton Lynn. I have a lot of questions about the process. He's been a defensive coordinator for 1 year. What happened to Jim Leonard? Did he want too much money for himself and his coaches? Did Tony White use USC to get more money from Nebraska, or was there something else? And is Lynn going to bring in his own staff, or are we going to have the same coaches? Hopefully we don't keep them. This isn't a home run hire, but I would say it's a solid double with reaching third and an outfield error. Fine on, Tony, in Denora, PA.
Number one is my biggest concern. I think that there's a ton to like about Danton Lynn's time at UCLA, but it's a 1 year sample size, and a 1 year sample size is not a great sample size. It is a great 1 year, but it would be nice if there was more proof that he could replicate it. If he doesn't have a first round NFL draft pick rushing the passer with Leao Tulatu and you know, guys like the Murphy twins and all of that. What will his defense look like if he doesn't have that level of playmaker? Can he create another playmaker like that? Leao Tulatu was really, really good in 2022. He was even better in 2023. So, like, that would be my hope from Danton Lynn, is that I don't think USC has a Leao Tulatu, but they have some dudes who are pretty decent this year who could get a lot better next year and with the right kind of coaching. And I think that's what you have to sort of identify and focus on from that perspective, is the improvement that UCLA made. They had Leao Tulatu last year and had a really bad defense.
Mm-hmm.
They had they elevated those players even beyond being very good last year as an individual into creating a strong unit. That's what Danton Lynn needs to do.
I know that I've heard the idea that, yeah, SC doesn't have a Leiatu Latu. No, but there's a Bear Alexander there.
Yeah. And there's talents like, I mean,
Jamil Muhammad, I think, could.
Corey Foreman, Jamil Muhammad, Romello Height, and yeah. Anthony Lucas are all players that have immense talent, immense potential,
mm-hmm.
that you have to hope that can be unlocked. And maybe you get even more out of Bear Alexander, and he's yeah. your Leiatu Latu equivalent, obviously playing a very different position. But
yeah.
Number two, what happened to Jim Leonard? I was extremely skeptical of Jim Leonard coming and being USC's defensive coordinator until all the smoke around Jim Leonard potentially coming to be USC's defensive coordinator. So what happened with Jim Leonard? I'm guessing all of the reasons that I was skeptical about Jim Leonard becoming USC's defensive coordinator won out. He seems like a Midwest guy. He seems like a guy who wants to live in Wisconsin and or live in that region. Never really felt like a he's going to come to LA kind of guy. So I don't know. I don't know I don't have the inside scoop there, but it felt like a long shot for its own reason. Did Tony White use USC to get more money? Yes. I mean, yes. He interviewed for the job, so clearly, at least that's the reporting that's happened. Mm-hmm. So clearly he was in the running at a certain point. I don't think Lincoln Riley would interview somebody without being serious about potentially actually pulling the trigger and hiring them. So yeah. I don't think it was like a smokescreen or anything like that. I think that he probably made the decision that I think a lot of others would have made, which is why leave a good situation to go take over a really, really tough situation at USC. It sort of makes sense. And number five, I the home run hire, obviously I agree. And that's not a bad thing. You know, a double isn't a bad thing. Putting a man in scoring position is really, really good. The only issue with a double relative to a home run is that having a man in scoring position doesn't mean that the guy who's at the plate is going to be capable of bringing that guy home.
Could be Mookie Betts in the playoffs.
And yeah. And that's really the question for USC. But I think it's also important to recognize that, like, if Danton Lynn is a home run hire, then what is Manny Diaz? then what is, you know, any of the, like, super, super, super elite hires that USC could have made? Like, to me, yeah. that's what I would refer to as a home run.
Yeah. Let's go to questions we've got here on YouTube's. Roman Murdy says, will SC have more of a home field advantage than Louisville in the Holiday Bowl? I don't know. Okay, Louisville's never been to the Holiday Bowl as far as I'm aware of. I'm pretty sure they haven't been. It's far away. Louisville's not exactly some place that you need to escape the cold, say, compared to other places. But still, I think it would be a nice bowl destination if you're a Louisville fan, right? Like, are SC people excited about going to the Holiday Bowl? Usually not. However, people weren't excited about the 2019 game, and I was shocked how many SC people were there. Like, there were a ton of SC people in 2019.
That's where I'm coming from, is that I expected Iowa to out-travel USC to the Holiday Bowl in 2019, and that didn't seem to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's this is difficult to say. I think the inherent, you don't have to fly to get there. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily even have to get a hotel to get there, is probably going to give USC an advantage just by that, yeah. because the economy is what it is, and spending power is what it is.
We've been talking about, like, should we go? Like, it gives us a reason to go to Hodad's.
Yeah. And I was, I've never been to Petco Park. I think it would be really cool to go
Petco
to
Petco Park is to elite.
Petco and see USC play. Like, 100% would have, but like, if we lived in Louisville and had to make that calculation, we would just flat out not go.
Right.
Because of the expense. Living in Los Angeles, like, yeah, we could. We could swing that theoretically.
Petco is like, here's the great stadiums in baseball. It's Wrigley Field, then Petco. Well, Wrigley Field, Petco, Coors. Those are the big three. Undoubtedly. This is like a no trolley answer too. Like that's a dead serious
answer.
I
don't have opinions on this necessarily. Like
You've never been inside Coors or
the Wrigley. Only baseball stadiums I've been to are Dodger Stadium, Angel Stadium, and
it's a disappointment.
Yankee Stadium for a Liverpool game.
New Yankee
Stadium. Yeah. And Oracle.
So you went to two boring generic stadiums in Dodger Stadium and Anaheim Stadium. And then a sanitized
Yankee Stadium, and then
corporate Yankee Stadium,
and then the Giants in San Francisco with you,
yeah,
on our honeymoon.
This is true. I forgot about that. Yeah, Pac Bell Park against the Rockies.
Is it Pac Bell Park?
I call it Pac Bell.
Oh, it's
baby.
Not Pac Bell anymore. What's it? But is it Oracle?
Oracle.
Okay,
Oracle.
It is Oracle.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Scott says Wrigley has certain issues with structural elements blocking view. That's a thing. Yeah. Not as bad as Fenway. Fenway's worse with that. But yes, that's a thing at Wrigley for sure. Robbie in the chat says Kentucky gets pretty cold. That's fair.
I'm mostly
thinking like, you know, compared to, say, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's not as cold as Wisconsin. But yeah, it gets cold for sure. What channel's the Holiday Bowl? I imagine... no, it's on Fox. It's on Fox. I think I saw that on the Wikipedia page earlier. I think it's on Fox.
Double check this right now.
All right. Other questions we got in...
It's on Fox.
In the... Big Fox that we got in the chat. Cameron has a couple of questions. Is this DC hiring of Danton Lynn the ultimate suck at what's brewing show to Jake? We're getting dinner with Jake this week. I think we can ask him, but I think the answer has to be yes, right? Like...
Just based on the tweets that I've seen from the What's Brewing show since the hire,
they're down bad.
I feel bad because I know that feeling. Like, it's like 2018 and 2019 and 2020 with Clay Helton. Just like at the end of every year, you're just like, I just don't. I'm over it.
Yeah. All right. Cameron's other question: of the quarterbacks in the transfer portal today, who would you want SC to pick up? We talked about that earlier. If it's me, it's Cam Ward. If it's you, who are you picking? You have ultimate power here.
If it's me, it's Cam Ward. But honestly, like, my honest answer is whoever Lincoln Riley wants. Whoever Lincoln Riley picks, I will feel confident that quarterback is capable of doing what Lincoln Riley wants him to do. But just on the surface, I'd say Cam Ward.
Yeah, this is the one area where I think that Lincoln Riley deserves all of the trust on is quarterback decisions. There's no reason to doubt his quarterback decisions at all.
Yeah.
Really. There just isn't historically. There hasn't been a reason to doubt those things. If it was totally up to me, guys who aren't even in the transfer portal, I've said this before, I think Shredder Sanders is the guy. But obviously... You can't do that. He's not leaving his dad at Colorado. Lamont says with Marshawn Lloyd leaving and Austin Jones leaving, Barlow should reconsider leaving because this could be his opportunity to be the Thunder to Joyner's Lightning.
For the bowl game, I would say that makes sense, but USC has... I think I've seen that Austin Jones might be considering playing. I mean, Marshawn Lloyd even said he would play, but before he declared to the draft, so I don't even know what's going on there. But they've got Joyner, they've got Amaron Peterson. You know, Barlow, I think it's just important that he gets mm-hmm. he gets to where he's going. USC did have guys last year who were in the portal play in the bowl game, so... Don't rule that out either, but I think it would be really fun to see Darwin Barlow get 20 carries in a bowl game for USC, personally.
I would. Here's my thing about Darwin Barlow. I don't want to pee in anyone's Cheerios. But I think, like, if Darwin Barlow was this, like, if he was truly this incredible running back, you're telling me that, like, he wouldn't have gotten more playing time?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's been multiple coaching staffs at SC that could have given him more playing time now.
Yeah.
And he like, I understand that there's always, like, there's nobody, there's no fan favorite like the backup. But, like, we've seen this with Jamel Cook. We've seen this with Marquis Stepp. We've seen this with, like, there's a bunch of guys who you see glimmers or you hear glimmers about what happens in practice, and then they become the big shiny hope of the future. And then they end up transferring, and they don't really do anything when they transfer either. And so, like, that's my only concern. Like, I think Darwin Barlow is very fun. I think he's fun to watch and all that stuff. I think that if he was truly a fantastic, as good as people think that he has been in his small glimpses, I think he would have played himself into the rotation.
And I think that's a fair opinion to have.
Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, Darwin. Mm-hmm. Like, go to some other school where they're going to give you the run and then prove me wrong. I would be glad to eat crow here. I love watching the kid. I'm just always skeptical of the stuff there. All right, but before we get to the last couple questions, which are off topic, talk about the playoff. College Football Playoff Committee has made the decision. It's number one Washington playing against number four. Number one Michigan playing against number four Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, and then it's Washington. No, they're playing the Rose Bowl. And then it's Washington and Texas in the Sugar Bowl, which leaves out Florida State. Florida State, the first undefeated conference champion to be left out of the four-team college football playoff field. The only one, because this is the last year of the four-team college football playoff field. Alicia, your thoughts?
I think this is a systemic issue. Every year somebody gets left out, and the only thing that determines how much outrage there is how the field shook out to the point where we decide that it's okay that a conference champion got left out. But every year a conference champion, if not more than one conference champion, is left out. That is why a four-team playoff was always a massive mistake in a system where you have five power conferences, in a league where you have 130 plus teams. To only have a field of four was always going to create these impossible situations. And up till now, the playoff committee, the playoff got away with not running into the doomsday scenario of having this many undefeated teams and also the best league in the sport having not an undefeated champion. This is the system that they set up, and honestly, no matter what decision that the CFP made, somebody was going to be righteously furious, because Florida State getting left out is a travesty. It's a travesty. But if I'm being honest, Alabama getting left out would have also been a travesty in terms of who can actually go out there and win the playoff. I think winning the SEC does matter. Having the strength of schedule, and I'm not an SEC. I don't cape for the SEC. I agree that there's a lot of SEC bias in the sport, but it is the best league in college football year in and year out. And the ACC is not at that level. And it just sucks that it's a four team. It like, to me, that's what it comes down to. It sucks. But without Jordan Travis, I didn't want to watch Florida State in the playoff. I didn't want to watch Michigan, Florida State, to be quite honest. I just didn't. As a neutral here, I'm glad they made the decision that they made. It freaking sucks, but I'm glad they made the decision that they made.
Yeah, so I'm of a couple of minds here. First of all, I don't like the idea. I don't like the argument of just put the four best teams in. I've always been a best teams guy, but I think that, like, there's... Let me make a wild comparison here. It's like libertarianism. Like, libertarianism, decent idea, but, like, you can't go as far as not having seatbelts. You know what I mean? Like, there's a limit to these things, right? Like, best four teams. Theoretically, best four teams, yes, best four teams. But also, if we're literally talking about the best four teams, then Georgia would be in. And there's no reason Georgia should be in. So it's not literally the four best teams. I think, and it's not also the most, shouldn't be just the most deserving. It should be a combination of the two. It's the best deserving teams. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, that's the way I look at it. And the way, like, I've always said that they're, the best opportunity should be, you should get to the end of the season and then come up with a solution to solve the problem. And I think for me, that would be like a 7 or 8 team playoff this year would be, because I think in terms of like national championship quality teams that are worthy of like doing, like, I would include Georgia and Ohio State, and I would include Florida State, and I would include Oregon. I know Oregon's lost twice, but they've been to the same team by the same amount of points both times. They only lost twice because they played Washington twice. Ohio State only lost once because they only played Michigan once. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you had an 8-team playoff, I think this would be the year to do it, to solve it, because I think there's 8 teams that have the ability to win a national championship this year on the field. But realistically, I think there's 5 truly deserving teams. And it's aside from, like, saying that Michigan should be banned or whatever. It's Washington, it's Michigan, it's Alabama, Texas, and Florida State. For me, the biggest crime, and I understand why people don't agree with this, but the biggest crime and the biggest argument of, like, why even play the games would have been if Texas was left out. If Texas was left out, that would have been the biggest horseshit in the history of college football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It's not Florida State going undefeated. It's Texas being left out. Because Texas literally beat Alabama. If Texas was the 5th team, that would have been absolute garbage. Because they literally beat Alabama head-to-head. And I like how Texas was 3rd on the rankings, because that proves that head-to-head matchup mattered, which is exactly what the case should be. And then, okay, so then why am I okay with Florida State being 5? Because I think that if you gave Florida State's schedule, like, even apart from the Jordan Travis thing, if you gave Florida State's schedule to any of those other teams that we're talking about, I think they're also undefeated. Who did they beat besides LSU? And Alabama also beat LSU, and then also beat Georgia and, like, Ole Miss. Like, I'm sorry, but Florida State didn't play anybody besides LSU. I get that they're 13-0, but, like, let's look back at 2004. Auburn went 13-0, right? Nobody considered them to be in the playoff except for Auburn people, because we all knew that they weren't on the same level as SC and Oklahoma. 2005, Penn State goes undefeated. They nearly went undefeated. We all knew that even if they did go undefeated, there was no way in hell that they were going to, like, usurp SC in Texas. I understand that it sucks going undefeated and that you can only control what's ahead of you. But, like, this is a situation where somebody was going to get screwed. And as long as someone's going to get screwed, like, just because you went undefeated versus one loss shouldn't be the be-all and end-all here. Like, I'm sorry. I think wins matter here. And Alabama, like, I get the bloodthirst for, like, letting the SEC feel being screwed when the SEC doesn't get screwed compared to other conferences at the same rate. I get the bloodthirst there. And, yeah, it would have been satisfying if Alabama would have been screwed because of that. but like, I there's no logical reason to leave Alabama out either. There's no logical reason to leave any of the five out. But you have to.
And people don't like this, but I think it does matter that Jordan Travis is injured. It does matter that Jordan Travis is injured. If Michael Penix was injured, it would matter in that context. If Quinn Ewers was injured, it would matter to me in the context of these rankings. You know, if Jalen Milroe was injured and Alabama was trotting out, you know, Tyler Buckner, I would be advocating for Florida State to be in over Alabama. Like, I think that the Jordan Travis injury does have to come into account when it comes to deciding whether or not this Florida State team can actually compete in the playoff.
I was asked this on Twitter, and I think it's worthy to mention. Let's look at this from 12 months ago. Do you think that SC should have been? We know that Caleb Williams got hurt in the Pac-12 championship game. If SC beats Utah, they end up pulling it out, right? Like, we know that SC pulled within seven in the beginning of the fourth quarter, right? Like, let's say that they pull that game out. As is, with him playing hurt, they win by a field goal or whatever. Should SC have been kept out of the playoff because of Caleb Williams' injury?
If that was a calculation that somebody wanted to make, where because remember, last year there were two undefeated teams, two one-loss teams, and USC got taken out of it. But if USC is a one-loss team, and they are being put up against Georgia, Michigan, TCU, and Ohio State, and Caleb Williams has suffered a season-ending injury, I would have understood if the committee had said, no, we're not putting USC in if Caleb Williams isn't their quarterback, because there would be four other deserving teams that I think would have absolutely deserved to be in as well. Like, in the context of last year, I think it would have absolutely worked as an argument. I think that that's how it would have played out? I don't honestly know. If it was a season-ending injury for Caleb Williams and he absolutely couldn't play, and a 12-1 USC team got left out in favor of Ohio State, an Ohio State team led by CJ Stroud
that wasn't a conference champion.
Wasn't a conference champion. I would be furious as a USC fan, but like, without Caleb Williams, we can all be honest, guys. We can all be honest. Without Caleb Williams, USC last year wasn't a playoff team. And even with Caleb Williams last year, I don't think USC stood a chance in the playoff either.
I understand the need to ask the question, but I don't think they're remotely the same situation. The only reason Alabama is in and Florida State is out is because they beat Georgia and won the SEC.
Yes, yeah.
In the situation that last year, where let's just say that, SC wins that game with a gimpy Caleb Williams, and we don't know the severity of the injury and all that kind of stuff, you're assuming that they get jumped by Ohio State, who did not play in the conference championship week.
Yeah, and context is totally different.
That would have been a completely different scenario.
Yeah, it's not apples to apples.
It's not apples to apples, and so I don't think it completely works. I also think it's not exactly a fair comparison either, because in this hypothetical, Caleb Williams plays in the game still and wins.
Yeah.
Jordan Travis is not playing in the game, like, can't play on a broken leg in the same way, right? Like, I don't think it's exactly the same. I will say that if we were a Florida State podcast, I thoroughly understand getting here and being upset about the stuff. They should be upset. Absolutely.
It's outrageous that a undefeated Power 5 champion doesn't get to play for the national title. Yes.
But that's the system that was designed.
That's the dumbass system of a 4-team playoff with a 5-team scenario. Why they decided 4, I do not understand. It was probably just because 4 was neater than, you know, going from 2 to 4 made sense. They should have gone to 6. The fact that they didn't go to 6 or eight is a massive mistake
also
that they are paying for now. And it's not, I'm not the one paying for it. Florida State's paying for it. Like,
well, also, I don't like this idea that it's unprecedented that Florida State is the playoff team that did not make, like, the only 13-0 team to ever not make the play. That is true. But also, there is precedence for this. Look at 2014, the first year of the playoff. Florida State was the only undefeated team, the only one. They were not ranked number one. They were ranked number three. Yeah, number three. So, like, there's literally precedence for one-loss conference champions to be ranked ahead of them. Like, mm-hmm. the precedence is there. It's a different situation because the number of available teams, and there was that weird bullshit with Baylor and TCU and, like, that weird whole thing, and Ohio State squeaks in. But, like, the situation wasn't exactly the same, but Florida State wasn't number one by default. Like, they didn't just, you know, I understand the idea is four is in and five is out, but, like, you also need to look at this in terms of just the rankings in of itself. So, I don't know. I feel bad for Florida State. I feel bad for Florida State because I don't know what else they could have done.
Robbie in the chat says if the committee was consistent, Bama would have been out. No, but that's our whole point. Bama was number one with a loss over an undefeated Florida State in 2014. The SEC champion has been ranked ahead of teams that had better records of it most of the years in these rankings because the strength of schedule comes into play, the strength of record, all of that kind of stuff. Like, Alabama is ahead of Florida State by Notre Dame is ahead of Florida State in FPI. They're looking at advanced metrics too. Like, you can't totally ignore these things, and it's not all clean. You know, the formulas are all subject to things, but yeah. I'm not going to begrudge them for not wanting to leave out the SEC champion. I don't want the SEC champion left out except for shits and giggles. Would I giggle? Yeah, I would, but I would feel like Alabama had been hard done.
It's less about it them being in the SEC. I understand
it's the strength of their resume. It's a strong resume.
They literally beat number one.
The only reason they have a loss is because they played a tough out of conference matchup with a playoff team.
Right.
So, like, you take the Texas, if they had played Louisiana Monroe, they're undefeated SEC champion and no one has a problem mm-hmm. with them being in.
You know, the solution to all of this is the Michael method, which if you've never heard the Michael method, which I sort of alluded to before. The Michael method is you devise the playoff format this week. You see what you have, and then you're like, okay, how many worthy teams are there? Let's just see. Like, 2005, there's only SC in Texas. It's just going to be a two-team playoff. That's all it is, right? But in a year like this, I think that they could have looked at it and said it could have been either a five-team, could have been a six-team, seven-team, and eight-team. Like, I think all of those numbers would have made sense. But they don't have the luxury of doing that. And so when you don't have the luxury of doing that, someone is going to be screwed.
The good news is
no
one in 2024 is going to get screwed. Or yes. The teams that get screwed are going to be ranked 13th and 14th. And guess yes. what? They're going to have three right. losses, and I'm not going to give a crap that right. they got screwed.
I will also say, and maybe this is just the petty asshole in me, I watched what happened in 2003, and to me, that was a more ridiculous crime than this was. SC was literally the number one team in the country and didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I feel bad for Florida State.
Troy Miller in the chat says, the truth is college football isn't fair, and that's just how it is, unfortunately. Yes, like, and it has always been
this
supremely unfair.
And this is... Is this not what we love about college football? Like, not that you love this, that this happens, but you love that, like, there is this, like, one of the things that I don't like about the 12-team playoff is I worry that it's just going to make it like the NFL. And I love, like, the tension and the stress and the drama and the, and the scorn and all that. Like, I think there's a certain kind of art to it. I know it's not fair. It sucks. But, like, there's a certain kind of art to it. And I like that art. I like the BCS. I miss it.
No, the BCS sucked.
No, it didn't.
The BCS sucked. The playoff is a good thing. They just needed to not be stupid and do four. They needed to do six. At least six.
Well,
eight would have been my sweet spot.
After the debacle of 2014, how they didn't go to six then
was questionable.
Yeah.
Because literally every single year, teams that deserving teams have been left out. If they had just gone to eight, you'd have plenty of wiggle room to work with. And you wouldn't be leaving out undefeated group of five teams every year. And you wouldn't be leaving out teams that didn't get to play in their conference title game because of weird, stupid rules, all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, it's a system problem. I don't blame the people for trying to find the best solution within that system.
Yeah. All right.
Who's winning the Heisman, Michael?
It's Michael Penix.
The finalists are LSU's Jaden Daniels, Washington's Michael Penix, Oregon's Bo Nix, and Ohio State's Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah.
And I think it will be in that order.
I did not watch enough of Marvin Harrison and Jalen Daniels to Jaden Daniels to truly be able to say definitively either way. But for me, and with what I saw, it's undoubtedly Penix over Nix.
I think it's easily Penix and Daniels are the only two that I think should be seriously considered. And for me, Daniels just, you know, did essentially what
Daniels Caleb did crazy, nutty things. Like
did what Caleb did last year, which is just sort of have to overcome an incredibly terrible defense.
I'm fine with him winning. Yeah.
Yeah. He had 40 touchdowns and four interceptions. Yeah. I give him the Heisman.
Yeah. That's totally fine. But I do not get the Nix thing at all. Do not get it.
I get why he's in New York. He shouldn't be a factor in terms of winning.
But Nix should not win this thing.
No.
I do not get it. I do not get the Nix thing at all. All right, let's go to a couple off topic questions. Lawant says, Mike and Alicia, how are you guys? And how was your Thanksgiving? I've been away for the past few shows because after the UCLA game I had to take a mental break. But I'm back now.
Well, I'm glad you got to take a break. I think that's always a good thing to just sort of step away. I've had to do that a few times this season of just stepping away from Twitter and stepping away from social media, all that kind of stuff. Thanksgiving was lovely. I am sadly grateful that USC is no longer playing football every weekend and ruining my week to start with. Last 2 weeks of work for me over the weekend have been significantly better than any other weekends this fall. So yeah, we're doing good.
Yeah, Thanksgiving was good. I went on a cruise last week.
Without me.
Yeah, without you.
Boys trip.
It was a boys trip. Me and my best friend went and did a cruise. It was Adam Savage themed, like from Mythbusters. Which was super cool. That we did an egg drop on the cruise. And we made a contraption where it was a cup that was tethered on top of a cup holder. And we dropped it from one of the decks to the lower decks. The egg survived, and Adam Savage said that we did good. He really liked what we did. And to me, that was all I needed. That was that was the positive reinforcement that I needed in life. So that was good. Yeah. Always love going on a cruise. So it's good times. But here we are back again to talk about more bowl game stuff. I don't know. We got to devise the bowl game schedule. I think that we'll be back next week and then go back to two a week, maybe next week or something like that, to start getting you guys ready for transfer portal stuff. Bowl game previews, all that stuff. So we'll get to that as we go along. Last thing, USC priority in the chat says anniversary. I think they mean honeymoon. Legit thought you guys were brother and sister.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yikes. Yeah. Not quite.
Not quite.
Not quite. No. This ain't no Lannister situation.
Oh boy. Yikes. Okay. With that, we got to end right there. We'll be back next week. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We appreciate you guys as always. You guys are the best. Robbie in the chat says, love you all. Much love to everyone in the chat. Yeah, absolutely. So until next time, we will see you. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.